So in the next section, we're going to look at what do the guidelines recommend service provision should look like. So what sort of service, if you get a referral, you're looking for a referral for NHS, what should that service provision look like? So Mark, would you like to take this one?
Absolutely. And I suspect some of this might have been covered previously, but I think that what happens when you actually do get to your assessment, Carla, maybe you could field that question for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you get to an assessment, you will normally have been provided some information prior to your appointment, as Sarah said, and you may have had a read of some information yourself. You'll most likely be assessed either by a physiotherapist or a clinical scientist. So in some services within the UK, the clinics are run by both physios and clinical scientists. And they will have had additional training and competencies in the use of FES. An assessment really should be completed face-to-face. You know, since COVID, people are kind of hybrid working. We are using virtual appointments for certain things, but in terms of an assessment, it really needs to be done face to face. We need to see you, we need to see your walk in, and we also need to be able to try the equipment, and we can't do that over a video. The assessment will include many questions to start with. There'll be quite a lot of getting some background history, what your problems are, what you feel your difficulties are, what you would like to manage in terms of expectations, what you'd like to achieve out of the use of FES. It will also ask things about your home, your support network, if that's appropriate. And then we'll also complete a full neurological physical assessment, looking at your walking, your muscle strength, and everything that would be normally completed within a neurological physio exam to some extent. And that's to help get a clear picture of you, your needs, from a subjective point of view, whether FES might be appropriate. If all the contraindications and precautions have been cleared, what we'll normally do is trial that equipment on you. So we'll put the electrodes on, we'll turn the machine up, basically until we see your foot do what it is that we want it to do, if your foot is where we're using it. And then if that's successful, we will trial you with it in walking. For some people, the sensation, and Sarah might have something to add to this afterwards, the sensation, it's kind of like pins and needles. Some people tolerate it really well. Some people really don't like it. So there can be options in that. Some people might not like it originally, and we might go to what we call a desensitization program, and we kind of set somebody up with an exercise machine first before getting them to use it in walking. For the majority of people, we go straight to walking, we trial it. If it helps, if the patient likes it, then depending on the service, in our service, we normally fit you with that equipment on the same day that we assess you. We provide written and verbal instructions, how to use the machine, we go through it all with you, and then we send you home with it.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. And obviously that experience of the assessments and working with the healthcare professionals, clinicians, may vary from area to area, but generally that would be the expectation.
Some services will do an assessment on one day and then they'll bring you back on another day to complete the fitting. We find doing them on both on the same day works for the majority of our patients. For some days, for some patients, we do split it. The reason we often keep them together is our catchment area is so significant. Some people may be traveling 2 or 3 hours to get to us. Mm. And therefore, we try to put it in one session to make it as efficient for everybody. We are always there on the phone or email. So we will normally review somebody 6 weeks after we've fitted them with the equipment. But within that 6 weeks, if somebody has any questions, they've forgotten how to use the equipment. It's a lot of information all in one go, obviously. They just call or email us and we're more than happy to discuss things via the phone virtually until their next appointment with us.
That's great. Thank you. And obviously,
and I think that is that comment of Carla's. It's more her comment about the next appointment. I think it's very important that people are assessed on at least an annual basis, because your feet do change in a year and your walking does change and your condition does change, certainly something like MS. And so it's very important that when you get your follow up for a year down the line, that you make sure you're there for it, because it's really useful, again, having that face-to-face follow-up with the physiotherapists.
Now is a good time to sort of talk about some of these questions that people have posed. So assuming there's no NHS funding, what sort of costs would you be talking about in terms of the service provision? I know they can really vary, but Carla, do you want to maybe comment on that one?
It really is variable. It can vary from a couple of thousand to a few thousand. There's different types of equipment that are available, both within used within the NHS and used privately. I don't really know whether the webinar's the time to go through different brands, or but that, you know, there's different companies out there. There's
I think a good question would be maybe so if I was a patient and I'd looked and there wasn't any NHS funding in my area and I wanted to go to a private sort of facility, what sort of questions should I ask? What are the good questions to ask to make sure that I'm going for, you know, that I'm not being taken for a ride, for one? How can I protect myself when I'm looking for, if I'm looking at private sort of funding for this sort of thing?
Yeah, so good questions to ask are, you know, what experience does that physio, if they're working privately, have of FES? What equipment do they have experience in? So not everybody who is trained in FES has experience in every piece of equipment that is available on the market. Therefore, if you approach somebody that has experience in one certain piece of equipment, that's the piece of equipment they're likely to assess you with and encourage you to purchase. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the right one for you, in terms of if you're spending money on it. So I would ask them what experience they have, what equipment experience they have, and also what kind of input they provide to you. So they'll do an assessment and fit you, but what are their costs in terms of ongoing treatment? Who provides or who orders the supplies, if for example it's electrodes? You could also ask questions like in terms of the warranty on the equipment, how much warranty does it have? If something goes wrong with it, would the private physio support you with getting that fixed, or is it for you as a patient to sort out with the manufacturer of the equipment? They're all things that you need to think of when purchasing privately about moving forwards. Within the NHS, you have a little bit of a safety net, and basically we sort everything out for you. Privately, you are then ultimately responsible for all aspects of the ongoing treatment. In the FES, as kind of the clinical guidelines, and as Sarah's mentioned, we review somebody annually, because clinically we feel that that's the most beneficial to help make tweaks and changes, also necessarily refer people onto other services if needed. You would have to factor that into private provision if you wanted a review annually. And you also have to ask them their hourly costs. You know, all private physios have a different cost. So not only are you paying for their hourly cost and time, and roughly how much time would be an assessment and a fitting. So you have kind of, you know, not strict numbers of that, but an idea of how long that would take and the cost of that. And then you have the separate cost of the equipment. And as I said, there's different types of equipment available that will have different costs. So it's very difficult to give a strict this costs 3,000, this costs 4,000, because they will all vary. But what you then need to do is add those two costs together once you've decided on what piece of equipment that you would like.
Thanks, Carla. Any tips, Sarah, for when you're looking at going for a device, say if it's private, for example, so that people can protect themselves when they're looking for treatment?
That unfortunately I don't have any advice on, because I've been lucky enough to have mine through the NHS. But I think with all these services, Carla's advice is spot on. We really do need to protect ourselves. And let's face it, as a patient with a disability, we are quite wise to some of these things, and we get a feeling about it because we know how important it is that we manage our disability. So all I can say is just stick with your gut feeling. Once you've been through all those points that Carla suggested, you'll make the right decision.
To right, build on that. Sorry, I just spotted that.
Please go ahead, Mark.
Kate has suggested that actually she has lived experience, a decade of being a device user. And she's suggesting that actually she'd be happy to share that experience via a Facebook group or maybe a connection to one of the organising charities or maybe indeed this organisation. Mm-hmm. So I think learning from others' experience is always a good idea. And maybe we'll pick up offline with Kate and others who would be interested.
Yeah, just to add to that. So IFAS, the International Functional Electrical Stimulation Society, is there to support research, clinical application, and people using electrical stimulation to enhance their quality of life. And that's the aim and purpose of IFAS. We are available to take queries about, so if you aren't sure about stuff, then you can, or you want to know where treatment you might be able to get in different parts of the world, but also in the UK, which we're mostly focusing on at the moment, and you can email us. And we will get back to you, and we're in touch with lots of different experts in the area, researchers, clinicians. We have an IFAS clinician map where you can get in contact with people that are IFAS members. Those are people who are part of our society. But if you have any doubts and you have any questions about electrical stimulation, there's been a lot of questions that have been coming up, do feel free to get in contact and we can put you in touch with the research experts in the area. Okay, and the clinician experts as well. Okay, great. There's quite a few other questions. We have overrun a little bit, but I think that's okay because I think there's some really good questions that have been coming in. I wonder if we should move to answer some of those questions and then come back and sort of respond to them by email to any ones that we don't get through to. So there's one from Andrew Williams that asks, is there a risk that some clients may get frustrated with a potential 16-month wait, resulting in them purchasing FES privately, which may not be suitable? Do individual manufacturers follow any ethical guidelines when selling direct to clients? That's an interesting one.
It is an interesting one. So normally it's not necessarily the manufacturer, well, it depends what kind of equipment you're buying, but if you're buying it specifically to aid walking, the majority of manufacturers normally request that equipment is set up by a trained clinician, whether that's a physio, a clinical scientist, sometimes an orthotist. Sometimes these people work for those companies. Sometimes you as a patient may have approached a private physio who just happens to use that equipment and therefore has links with those manufacturers. And I guess that might be one of those questions that we were talking about earlier in terms of who do you approach. Personally, I would probably approach a private physio who has experience in many different forms of FES rather than one manufacturing company of FES, because you're more likely to get a slightly unbiased view, and in terms of equipment, they may have experience in multiple types of equipment and therefore provide you with the one that is most suitable. You know, we've talked earlier in terms of professionalism and competencies. Private physiotherapists also have to adhere to the standards of the Chartered Society of Physiotherapists, and therefore they should be working both professionally within a competence remit and with the patient's best interests. You know, I we can't guarantee that, but as a physio, that's what we should be working towards with the Chartered Society of Physiotherapy standards.
Thanks for that, Carla. Does anybody want to add anything to that? Right, okay. So Carla, a few more questions for you.
Yeah,
definitely the spotlight. Can you use FES with Botox?
Yes, absolutely. So we commonly use FES with Botox.
Anybody's managed to reduce the amount of, they've not needed the Botox quite as much while using the FES at all?
Yeah, so I've recently done a presentation at this for the West Midlands Rehab Centre, who did a spasticity study day. And we frequently link with our spasticity colleagues within the centre, because we also run a specialist spasticity service who includes Botox treatment. So it really depends. It can have varying effects. For some patients, it has no effect, as something does. For other patients, it can help prolong the time between needing their next Botox injections, and also it help improve their range. For some patients, we have such great results that they no longer need Botox moving forwards. So as with everything, there's always a sliding scale of what effects you may get. For others, it's amazing. For others, it's not so good. But absolutely, there is evidence out there that FES and Botox together can provide better results than just one on their own. And we'd also say the same alongside orthotic splinting. So for example, for the upper limb, using FES alongside a resting splint is likely to provide better range than just a resting splint, which holds an upper limb in a fixed position.
Right, thanks for taking that. So we're just coming towards, I think, the end. We've overrun a little bit, but we will get back to all those questions and provide some answers. So hopefully what we've set out to do is to answer the questions, am I suitable for FES? How do I get a referral for FES? And what do the guidelines recommend for service provision for receiving FES? And hopefully we've answered the basic questions there. I really want to thank Kathy, Sarah, and Carla, and Mark for joining us to get involved and answer some of those questions. It's been delightful. Thanks for all the prep work as well that everybody's been doing. And thank you also to our background technical people, Ken Yoshida and Michael Obach in the background, sorting out everything for us technical wise. We will send an email to you with contact details. So if you do have any more questions that pop into your head, you want to get in touch with any of our panelists today, then please do. You can get in contact through us that way. When we send out the email, and you'll have a recording available and a list of those questions and maybe some helpful links to different things like the actual guidelines if you want to go and have a read of those. So thank you to everybody. And I think we'll close the session there. Anybody want to say anything else? Mark?
Thank you.
I was just going to thank the panelists for their contribution. Thank you, Tamsin, and the Society for putting on the webinar. And thank you, everybody who's participated and joined us. Thank you.